Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's go back to 2011. Look at the World Cup with Squidge. Let's go back. Oh baby, let's go back with Squidge.
Hello, and welcome to the Squidge Rugby and Whatever Fiji Were Doing World Cup Retrospective, in which we look at the 2011 Rugby and Whatever Fiji Were Doing World Cup and analyse all of the rugby and whatever Fiji were doing. Today, the match we will be looking at is Samoa against Fiji. Joining myself, Robbie Squidge, whatever you want to call me, as ever, is the one, the only... Well, sorry, what's your name? Go on, fill in the blank.
My name, as far as I'm concerned, is Will Owen.
What about as far as anyone else is concerned?
Well, I mean, that's not written on my birth certificate.
It's not, is it?
My birth certificate says my full name, which Twat. You always address me as on this podcast.
Well, this is the thing, right? Okay, now this is a... Okay, like my friend Philip, right, who I've known since I was about five.
Yeah.
I am one of two people in the world who call him Philip, because it's me and his nan call him Philip.
Do people call him Phil now?
Everyone else calls him Phil. Yeah.
Right, okay.
But I've known him since he was five, and he was Philip until he was about 11 or 12.
Right.
At which
okay.
point, when he was a teenager, he started going by Phil. And so everyone he knows as Nadal, everyone he's known, you know, he know from uni and so on, calls him Phil.
Right.
I've always known him as Philip, and I call him Philip. And, like, I called him Phil once, and it felt so, we both agreed it felt so wrong that we'll never do it again. Yeah, his parents call him Pip, and me and his nan call him Philip.
Sure. Wow.
And yeah, everyone else calls him Phil. And it's a bit like that because you were William when you were, you know, when I knew you.
Yeah.
And so instinctively, I will still most of the time call you William.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I do remember in the early stages of this podcast, whenever you would address me as Will, it would sound so unnatural.
I know. Like, I made a really concerted effort. And
you've managed
up.
To do it. Now it works.
Yeah.
Like, when you do it now, like, it was in the first couple of episodes, I remember thinking, oh, this doesn't sound natural. You've mastered naming your own brother.
No, every time I think I'm reading out what you're going to give away when you're dead and that. Or I'm just asking a question, like, will Owen, will Chris Pratt's character from Jurassic World do this? I don't know whether it's the first Owen that came to mind.
Yeah.
I don't know if I remember character name. I remember Bryce Dallas Howard's character is called Claire as well. I remember that. Why do you remember the character name from Jurassic World?
I don't know. Like, Owen Farrell not come to mind first?
No, I don't know who that is.
Oh, okay, me neither. Owen Wilson?
No. Wait a minute, no. Owen Farrell was playing for the England 20s this year, wasn't he? Because it's 2011.
That.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's true. I think that Christian Wade lad's going to get a lot of caps.
Go, I know. He looks promising, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Multi-talented athlete as well, you know.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that Vunipola lad.
Which one?
Billy's older, isn't he? So he wasn't in the 20s this year.
But Mako looks older.
True.
Mako looks older than most 50-year-olds.
Yeah, no, it's very confusing.
Weirdly,
and we're talking, he's 19 at this point.
Mako looks younger now than he did when he was 21.
He does, doesn't he?
Now in 2020, yeah.
Because I feel like maybe like his nose was massively overgrown, like that grew into like his final like 40-year-old self. I'm not saying Mako Vinopola is going to die aged 40, but you know, it felt like it had grown into that sort of a shape, and the rest of his face just kind of stayed 19. So you add that together, you look about 90.
I don't know what it is. It's something about the kind of the folds of his skin that made him look wrinkled prematurely when he wasn't.
Yeah.
I remember Andrew Cotter tweeting about how so-and-so looks like... I can't remember who it was he was talking about.
He said it's the youngest-looking 40-year-old since Mako Vinopola.
He's the oldest-looking 40-year-old I've seen since Mako Vinopola, who's 22.
Yeah.
Which was excellent. Excellent.
God bless
peak,
Andrew Cotter.
Peak Andrew Cotter.
Yeah.
However, Andrew Cotter was not involved in this rugby and whatever Fiji were
what
doing.
What a segue.
The commentator said was Martin Gillingham, who actually, in this game, did not mention Nottingham once.
It's very disappointing. This is
the second out of his 7 games where he hasn't mentioned Nottingham. Yeah. And I'm absolutely gutted by that.
We will, however, after, because it feels weird to lead on this, so we'll have to talk about this later. We'll have to talk about Andy Gormasol in a bit, who was also in the commentary, because
we have to come back to Andy Gormasol.
He was interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, so to begin on the game itself, the match finished Samoa 27, Fiji 7.
Yeah.
So I don't even quite know where to begin. I suppose we can run through the team, because it is that, as we talked about in past episodes, that peak Samoa team, you know, that best Samoa team of probably since the 99 World Cup, you know, possibly better than that team.
If you're wondering why Samoa won this game so convincingly, and for the record, like, I seem to remember this game being a massive snore fest, and I wasn't looking forward to watching it. It was better than I remembered it.
I agree, yeah.
It wasn't, like, a brilliant game, don't get me wrong, but, like, it was just Samoa controlled it very nicely, and Fiji looked utterly clueless. But
the thing is, though, right, you say it's not a snore fest, and I've kind of worked out why that is. Because this game was played at 4 a.m. UK time.
Right, yeah.
So we were both very tired, clearly. Yeah. So I remember being really
tired.
You know
why I remember that very well?
Go on.
Because at halftime, we'll go through a spoiler. There's a bit in the first half where Salosi Tanithakinbau is held up over the try line by Napoli Onilanga from this lovely break by Paul Williams, where they set him up to nearly slide over. It looks like a gimme. And then Craig Doyle at halftime says, it's a great tackle by Nalanga. If there are any kids watching this, firstly, what are you doing up? Secondly, look at this tackle technique, never give up in defence.
Yeah, and we were watching. We were, you know, still technically under 18.
Sure.
Technically,
you say technically. We were under 18.
Yeah, we were under 18.
We were less than 18 years
old. He was still going by Philip. That's how young we were.
So
this game was played about 4 a.m, which meant, however, Eden Park in the day. And I'll tell you what, Eden Park in the day is like the most underrated atmosphere. Eden Park at night
is
fine.
It looks so weird, though.
But Eden Park, I love Eden Park in the day. And this is like, this is the most disproportionate quality / you know, like, weight on a game to best atmosphere of certainly this tournament, but that I can remember pretty much. Because you had these, you know, obviously being played in Auckland, huge community of both sides of, you know, both Islanders.
Yeah.
And then you also had, as Jamie mentioned in the previous episode, you know, loads of Islanders coming up to New Zealand for the time, for the because of the World Cup. And so the crowd was packed out with Fijians and Samoans, or Kiwis with Samoan heritage or Fijian heritage.
And
it was a fantastic atmosphere.
Yeah,
you know,
it was.
Everything got a huge cheer. Yeah, all of them were really cheering every tackle, every kick, every point. It was, frankly, like, the crowd deserved far better than the game gave them.
Sure, sure. Well, there was, if you search Fiji versus Samoa Rugby World Cup 2011 into YouTube, rather, you get a short 3-minute, like, a news kind of clip thing, much like we watched before, for the Samoa-Namibia game. And it's not got any DJ Khaled on it, sadly.
No!
But it does have, like, lots of Fijians and Samoan fans sort of saying, oh, yeah, we're going to, you know, we're going to smash him, we're going to smash him. And then there's one really lovely Fijian fan who says, well, it's just sibling rivalry at the end of the day, so, you know, even if we lose, I don't really mind, you know, just so long as they do well in the next game against the Springboks, I'm quite happy.
Oh, so, that's lovely. That's really nice. Yeah, and there was a warmth to the atmosphere as well, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think, do you know what, right, okay. Is Fiji-Samoa the best rivalry in rugby? Because it's intense, and the players smash each other, but there's no animosity amongst the fans. The fans don't have that anger that England-Wales, or the All Blacks and the Springboks Australia. or Australia both do, and England with Scotland as well in France, where there's a genuine kind of unrest in the stands. Yeah. Whereas you don't get that with Fiji-Samoa, but it has that same weight and history.
Like it is
one of the oldest fixtures in rugby. Like, obviously that story about the first time they played, they had this tree in the middle of the pitch.
Of course.
And it's kind of gone on from there to the point in which they've got 65,000 people watching them play at a World Cup, plus thousands more watching it on television at 4 a.m. as children.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, and as you say, like, it was weird watching Eden Park in the day, because I genuinely don't really remember seeing games played in the day there.
There was a couple in Aotearoa played there. And it's great. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Eden Park in the day. And obviously the Tonga game that I was on my flight to Japan during New Zealand Tonga last year.
Okay, yeah.
Their warm-up game. And I watched some of the highlights in a bar in Shibuya when I got in, where they were playing the Wales Island warm-up game.
Nice. What was the point I was just making when I said about this allegedly being a snorefest? What was the point I was just making?
You mentioned Craig Doyle.
Before that.
It was better than you remembered it.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I'm going to have to ditch whatever point I was about to make there. Yeah, sorry about that.
No, I enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you very much. So yeah, so it was, as you said, as you kind of mentioned, Samoa in complete control. Do you want to know my theory on why Samoa was so dominant in this game?
Go on.
Okay. I spent the whole game thinking about this, and I've got a really kind of, I think, compelling, and I dare to say, accurate theory.
Okay.
On why Samoa won this game and looked so in control the entire way.
Okay, hit
right?
me.
It's because they're a rugby team.
I think that might be something to do with it.
Yeah.
I have a theory which counterbalances it.
Okay.
So Samoa, a rugby team, as you've stressed.
Yeah.
Their kicking game was pretty good, wouldn't you say, in this match? Fiji struggled with that because I think in order to prepare for a good kicking game, you need to be able to practice on a full-size pitch, don't you? And Fiji didn't have that luxury because all of their pitches were full of frogs.
Of course they were. All their pitches were full of frogs, which sounds like an early internet meme. Yes. But they didn't even look like... And maybe that was it. Maybe they just went, we've got a full pitch here. Because Fiji didn't seem to aim where they were kicking.
No, they would
just randomly boot it. So there were some kicks that went out on the full, but there were a lot of kicks that just randomly landed in the middle of the pitch. Like, not near anything. Not in a helpful position for anyone at all. And, like, Paul Williams got man of the match in the end of Samoa fullback. Not the rugby journalist and not the referee and not anyone else called Paul Williams. The Samoa fullback, Paul Williams, got man of the match. But all he had to do was just pluck the ball out of the air under no pressure after these terrible, terrible kicks being hung down his throat time and time again.
I'll tell you what, doesn't it make you really grateful for, like, come the 2019 World Cup, Kinyamo Moravalu being able to put at least somewhat competent kicks back to oppositions because... In this World Cup, he has no clue how to kick a ball.
No. And a few times he tries, and he just doesn't know what he's doing.
No,
and like,
Nicky
Little,
form's all over
regarded
the place.
As the best kicker Fiji ever had. I mean, what was he doing? What was, like, you called it a kicking game by Fiji. It wasn't. Like, it was they were kicking, but there was no strategy to what Fiji were doing with the boot. It was pointless and weird.
Yeah, no, there's no kicking game from Fiji. It was from Samoa. There was a good kicking game. I'll make that very clear. That's what I meant. But
it's amazing. It's amazing the difference having a good fly half makes.
Yeah,
because so Samoa's previous game, they had...
This was the point I was going to make.
Go on.
The reason Samoa, a good rugby team, won this game so well is because they had finally gotten rid of Tasesa Levea after 80 odd minutes of anguish of him trying to catch the ball against Wales. Finally, they had gotten rid of Levea and brought back Tusi Pisi.
They brought back in Tusi Pisi, who is a very good fly half.
Yeah.
And you put him up against a team as unorganised as Fiji, this Fiji team, and he will run riot. Like, he found so much space, and so did Slade Mapasu as well. He put in a couple of really nice kicks from 12.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
They also started doing
a couple.
This thing that every team does now, where their 12 takes a flat ball off a line out and looks to pass it out the back, then crashes it up.
Yeah.
Samoa kept doing that, and now every team does it, but it all began here. It was like watching the genesis of this thing that now has been stolen by everyone.
Okay, a couple of things on this. Right,
okay.
So, according to Martin Gillingham, at one point in the second half, on comes... your friend of mine, Eliota Fuamano Sapolu. And allegedly, he had made some comments, and I'm going to come on to the rest of the comments. He had made some comments about we'd have beaten Wales not only if we'd had... Not only complaining about the fact that they'd had a three-day turnaround, whereas Wales has had a seven-day turnaround. That was one thing he complained about. And the other one was apparently he said if Tusi Pisi was fit, we'd have won that game.
No!
So he dropped Levea in it. I couldn't find any evidence of that tweet.
Yeah.
I looked far and wide for it. But Martin Gilliam claims that Fuamano Sapolu said...
I believe it.
If Tusi Pisi was fit... Yeah, I believe it. Because you know he was on the sideline fuming, just saying, why is our 10 so crap, you know?
Yeah.
So, in the week leading up to this game, so in between the Samoan loss to Wales and this game against Fiji, Eliotafur Monosopolo had tweeted the following. IRB, stop exploiting my people. Please, all we ask, in fairness, they get a week, give us a week. Simple. Hashtag equity, hashtag justice. Okay, it's obvious the IRB are unjust. Wales gets 7 days, we get 3. Unfair treatment, like slavery, like the Holocaust, like apartheid. Fuck you. Give Wales 3 days off, give Samoa a week. We would kill them.
Wow. I mean, to a degree, I do agree with his point. And would have tried to... try to adjust since and try to make the rest periods more fair, because a 3 against a 7 day turnaround is very notable.
Sure, makes a huge the principle's difference. Heartwarming. Isn't
However, everything beyond that, I mean, like, I used to have a, when I did this sort of debate team thing in when I was in sixth form, the teacher who ran it always used to say, if you bring up the Nazis, you've automatically lost. You know, if you compare anything to the Nazis, you've lost because you're reaching for it. And him bringing up, I mean, it's problematic to bring compare anything to slavery.
Yeah.
Whether it's a gym workout, as you may have seen on Twitter today. No. Did you not see this?
No.
Oh, man. My friend who actually lives near the gym that's doing it sent it to me. And then it kind of went viral like a few hours later.
Right.
Basically, a gym in the sort of West Midland somewhere, I forget. I think it's maybe Luton or somewhere. I don't know.
Right. Okay.
They've started a fitness program to kind of celebrate, as they say, that's their word, Black History Month, called 12 Years a Slave.
Oh, no, they didn't.
Yep, and it concludes the phrase, their thing promoting it. They said, slavery was hard, and so was this.
Oh, no.
Yep. Slavery was hard.
Yeah, to be fair, like, it wasn't very fun, was it?
I forgot slavery was a prolonged leg day.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when slavery just ended one day, did everyone just come out and go, "Phew, it's pretty hard work, that."
Yeah.
Wouldn't do that again.
Monosopolo has automatically reached for a point because he thinks it was a motive, you know.
Yeah.
It's something I have a big problem. And he's more qualified to talk on racism than I am, and I don't mean to say otherwise. But I find it really problematic when people reach for slavery, when people reach for the Holocaust, when people reach for rape as well, it's the same thing, just because it's a motive. Paedophilia as well happens a lot. People just reach for them as like a blanket thing because they're emotive and because they make people feel strong emotions, as they should. And it's problematic when someone uses that in such a context.
Exactly. The main thing that's wrong with this is we are talking about the fact that Tier 2 rugby teams in the Rugby World Cup of 2011 are not given
the rugby
as long
and rest... whatever Fiji were doing, by the way.
Yeah, are not given as long a rest period as the good rugby teams in the Tier 1 that are perceived to be good or better,
or the rich
or whatever.
Teams. Yeah.
The rich teams, sure. That's what we're talking about here.
It's a problem, but it's a very localised problem.
It's inconvenient, but it's not quite the end of the world. I mean, don't get me wrong, as I say, like, Samoa maybe would have beaten Wales if they had a decent rest period, you know, because as we said when we had Ben James on the podcast talking about Samoa Wales, that was a very close game. And like, you know, another day Samoa would have won that. And, you know, we didn't mention at the time that Wales had a week off and Samoa had three days. But it is important to stress that is, you know, a factor of how Wales managed to pull through that game. And I think we might have said that Wales were the fitter team. And that was an aspect of it. Were they the fitter team or were they the fresher team? We can't really comment on that.
I think there's an element of both, but yes.
I agree, because that is a very fit Wales team.
From a tournament perspective, I get it, because the Tier 1 nations sell more tickets, you know?
Yeah.
You have more travelling fans from those nations. You have more people, you know, wanting to buy a ticket to watch a team that they perceive as being good.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And more people wanting to buy those games, so you prioritise and you put
them
on Saturdays and Sundays.
It's not as simple as telling World Rugby to sort it out and they can just do it, you know?
Yeah. Like,
somebody has to suffer, you know? And they've done very well in the last two World Cups, particularly the last one World Cup.
2015 was still...
Yeah, yeah.
Japan still think
against Scotland was a tough ask, wasn't it?
There's still quite a few cases in which they didn't quite turn it around, but at least there was more strain put on Tier 1 nations.
2019,
as well,
again, like, it's never quite going to be perfect. Someone's always going to complain. but they've
2019 made some fixes. Was as close as I think they could get without Agreed. Changing the period over, without it either being like the Netball World Cup where you play, you know, you play games constantly, or like the under-20s World Cup in rugby, where they just go play welfare out the window, you know, you'll play three games a week.
Everyone's playing, yeah.
They kind of came as close as they probably could, considering also they can't just go, we're going to have match as they do in netball and other sort of, without wanting to be disrupt, like minority sports, where the where you can do this, where they'd go, okay, they have matches on the Saturday, the Wednesday, and the Sunday, and every team plays on those days, you know.
Yeah,
you can't, or you do in sevens World Cup work.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
No.
And you couldn't do that in rugby, you couldn't do that in a FIFA World Cup as well. It's a really difficult balancing act.
However,
the number of teams and so on, and go on.
Yeah, to segue this point.
Yeah.
There was one player who was playing who wouldn't be fazed by that, who we have witnessed playing 160 minutes in a weekend before.
Yes, because the only Fijian player who played well.
Yes, exactly. So there's one point a couple of years after this where Netani Talai played 80 minutes for the Dragons one day, and then Fiji was short a player for their game against the Barbarians the next day. So he turned out and played 80 minutes for both.
Yeah.
So Netani Talai, we've not really spoken about in this moment yet, but we'll get out of the way all of Fiji's good players in this game.
Yeah.
Netani Talai was very good, and he scored a try in the second half, which is quite reminiscent of Dusa Tuwar's in 2007 against the All Blacks, I think.
Okay, yeah,
the,
I can see
the
that.
The tip-on line he runs. And obviously, like, his performance was nowhere near as good as Dusa Tuwar's, don't get me wrong, but like in a losing cause, he, like, before Fotu Ali's try, which of course we'll come on to, he makes a brilliant tackle on Tusi Pisi, who looks like he's going to make a line break. And all the whole time, like, he was, in basically every aspect of Fiji's game, he was the one player really standing out in their rucking, defence, carrying the ball. Yeah, he really led by example. I know he wasn't the captain, but he led by example.
Yeah, he was the one Fijian player who looked like he'd played rugby before, you know, and he was kind of consistently running, like, actual lines.
Yeah.
And he was, again, taking the ball at pace and just doing all of those basic things, all those things that sound like cliches, you know, that, that the Andy Gomez of the world would trot out and say, yeah, you know, you need your players to be carrying hard and to and looking for spaces, not faces, and so on. And all these things that are cliches, Netani Talai did and did really well. Whereas all of the other Fijian players looked like they'd never seen rugby before.
Yeah.
Or, no, it looked a bit like, and it, to some degree, this again sounds like one of those really lazy things, considering these are mostly 15 specialists, but it looked like a group of sevens players being thrown into play 15s for the first
time.
Yeah,
to an
extent. It didn't look like they understood structure or the game or the fact that it lasted 80 minutes at all. Like, and the other thing about Fiji is, you know, I mentioned last time, or maybe it's the episode before, about, it was the episode before, it was the England one, about how it was this was the era of centres who couldn't pass but could maybe offload.
Yes.
The entire Fijian team couldn't pass but could offload.
Yes.
Every time they had two hands on the ball, like the opposite of what any coach would say, they just lobbed it point, like it wouldn't go anywhere near. Like Kenitale, the scrum half, I don't think he threw a single pass on target all day. And when he did, it was above their head or like down by their knees.
There was one point very early on where Nakarawa gets this turnover because somebody had smashed Taitu Afua, who'd had a nice little run at the Fijian defence. And he throws this lovely overhead basketball style pass. And then later in the game, Nakarawa goes for a carry and two or three Samoan men just smash him. And Nakarawa looks for the offload and just drops it. And it's just like, wow, that's like, that guy's come on a long way.
But,
And the other,
like, Nakarawa gets stripped twice as well.
Yeah, wow.
Like, because he's still at the time kind of carrying the ball quite low. And so it made me realise, did someone have to coach that kind of like, that really dickish thing of holding the ball too high for someone to get it into him? Like, someone at Glasgow or somewhere else must have coached that into him afterwards. I don't know if he's maybe going back to sevens or something, but he wasn't doing that. He was carrying the ball at kind of
he's
chest
got a very specific way of carrying to offload now, hasn't
he? And so, he wasn't doing that then.
Yeah, that is an interesting thought. But yeah, in fairness, I think there are two other Fijian players who I think played pretty well. One of them is Napoleone Nalanga.
I know, to be fair, I think Nalanga does.
Yeah,
really
he
well.
Tried his socks off in this game, and like again, having done the same in the Springboks game where we spoke about with Gareth Mason before. And the other one, I think, Sisa Koyamabole played really well at number 8. Do you not notice?
No, I there's a couple of times he gets the ball and kind of trundles for an inch and then just looks big and slow.
But there was one or two exceptions, but I think the Fijian pack were really bad at looking after the ball. And yes, like, as you say, there were so many times they got stripped in contact, and like he was the one player who was kind of like trying to tell people, no, 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 this is how you carry the ball. Mm. And actually, like, you know, stayed low, had a decent leg drive, you know. There was one point where Fotu Lee caught him out the back of a scrum, but you can forgive him one, because his pack didn't do him a great service there. But no, I think he had a good game. But otherwise, okay. Fiji, pretty bad.
But they genuinely didn't look like a team that had ever trained. And I don't know if they just got too caught up in looking at frogs or something. There was no cohesion at all. And like, there wasn't even the thing that happens in Barbarians teams where they've had one training session, where at least they kind of chug it about and look fun, which is the thing you want from Fiji.
Yeah.
But their skills looked poor. Yeah. Like, it was, or certainly not up to this standard. Like, you know, that thing of, if you've got nothing nice to say, then say nothing at all, right? I've got, like, the nicest thing I can say about Fiji is they probably finished third in, like, the 1952 Five Nations.
Ouch.
Like, they were, it was like watching very old rugby, you know, from way back when actually everyone talks about the great highlights reel where people are throwing these ridiculous, incredibly skillful passes. But if you watch the full game back, they can't actually pass most of the time.
Aren't you glad that Fiji are great again now? They made Fiji great again.
Yeah. Yes.
Semi Rajendra did that.
I know. No, I'm very relieved. Also, did you see them at halftime? Did you see the footage of them at halftime?
No.
So, at halftime, Fiji is sat in the changing rooms. And when I say sat in the changing rooms, they've got out all of these little, like, plastic school chairs, these little red plastic school chairs that are all too small for them. And the forwards are sat in one circle and the backs in the other. They're just kind of sat around having a little chat. It looks like they're at a campfire or, like, they're Westlife or something. Like, they're just sat in school chairs having a little chat at halftime. It's the most low-energy, like, halftime talk I've ever seen.
That screams of the cliche of the forwards talk about rugby while the backs talk about feelings.
Yeah. I mean, all for it, you know, it just, something looked very, very wrong about it. It's quite telling that the forwards and backs were sat separately and they weren't communicating between each other.
They most likely will have split, though. I think they will have started off having a team thing and then split forwards and backs.
Sure,
That's what most teams would do.
Yeah, but most teams have practiced rugby before.
Sure, I won't begrudge you with that. By the way, you say the forwards and backs and then frogs were sat separately as well.
Yes, all the frogs had come in as well. They had to be cleared by all the lawyers, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Should we carry on talking about the Samoan team?
Sure, unless you want to talk about halftime more.
Yeah, go on then. Were there any good adverts this week?
There was one good advert.
Okay, go on.
So, I don't even remember this John Lewis advert, right?
No.
The Johnny Lewis advert from about this time. I saw it and I remembered it, but I couldn't remember what the advert was for. I couldn't remember what he was trying to sell me. I couldn't remember anything about it other than I remembered a bit of the advert.
Right.
It starts off with someone in the bedroom listening to the Smiths. It's the opening of This Charming Man.
This.
Yes! Yes! Yeah. Go on. Tell me about that.
No, I don't remember all of it. It transitions into like three different songs, right?
Yeah, so there's, I think it's the Specials next.
Right.
And there's like a little black kid having a dance off against like an absolute unit of a white kid. And the black kid just wipes the floor with him. And then kind of does this, like, what you got face to him. And in transition, there's a bit in a cafe and it's playing some pop song I recognise, but I can't remember. I didn't write it. Like, I missed it by the time I've written it down. It then moves on.
I think you should sing it.
I can't remember it. I can't remember what the song was.
I can't remember it.
Yeah, sorry. And then there's like a sick form common room and it's moving forward and forward in time. So like, the first one's in the 70s, then on the 80s, then like, you know, like late 80s, 90s, etc. There's Elton John, you know, and it's like Rocket Man. In a changing room, the teacher comes in and tells them to turn it down to a common room, rather. There's a bit of Bowie in there as well, which them lining up Rocket Man and Star Man next to each other feels very uninspired.
Yeah, definitely.
And then they've also got, in the middle of that, someone's watching something on TV and a very famous piece of music plays.
Right.
It's from the film they're watching. It's the theme tune to Black Beauty.
It's brilliant!
Exactly! Which is the reason I've got to write this down. They've included the theme from Black Beauty.
That's
brilliant!
Phenomenal. That's amazing.
And then, of course, finally, when we come up to the modern day...
Aha!
When we come up to the modern day, there's only one band they could possibly be listening to. There's a boy and, like, a young girl... They're kind of sat there and they're tentatively about to, like, hold hands.
Please tell me they're not listening to Moves Like Jagger.
They're not listening to Moves Like Jagger.
Thank God.
But they are, of course, listening to The Kooks.
Oh, my fucking God.
Yeah. So that was John Lewis's advert, and I worked out at the end, like, oh, they're selling all the products they're listening to music on. That's what the advert was.
Right, okay. So did John Lewis, who was running the advertising campaigns in 2011, yeah. Did he think that...
Big J.
Yeah, Big J. Big JL. BJL. Did he think that the way to get everybody to come and buy their goods from John Lewis is by using the Kooks?
Yes. They went the Smiths, the Specials, Bowie, Elton John. Complete the pattern. The Kooks.
The Kooks. This is how we buy things.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, when you come back to it in how many of a year's time, we will all be thinking of generic white men with curly hair.
Yeah, I guess, but...
But like, also, like, when you think of that...
Remember who the Kooks are in 3 years?
When you think of that late noughties kind of... That weird, like, white boy indie thing that happened, very much Noah and the Whale are the face of it. Noah and the Whale are like they're like the iconic face of that. Like,
do you think Noah and the Whale are bigger than the Arctic Monkeys?
No, the Arctic Monkeys don't count because they're like an actual thing. That's not what I'm saying. No. Of that, like, really twee, like, hipster, like, pre-hipster being a thing, but hipsterish, like, basic white boys. That the Arctic Monkeys are trying to say something, you know. Like, they
trying to talk more gobbledygook than... I mean that in a good way. I mean that the best way possible. Than actually say something meaningful, but...
No, but, like, the Arctic Monkeys don't count. The Arctic Monkeys aren't part of this. That kind of, like, weird indie...
So you're saying, like somebody has to be shit, basically.
They don't have to be shit, because, like... I don't think Noah and the Whale or the Kooks are shit. I think they're just what they were, you know. Like,
the Kooks are definitely shit.
I think they were... I think there's, like... two or three songs that are fine.
Oh, shit.
That are fine. Like, that I wouldn't turn off if they came on, you know.
Right.
I think Noah and the Whale are like the most famous example of that kind of really generic white boy indie. Like, they all had curly hair and they all wore like weird jackets. And I realised I might be describing myself in some ways.
Were you in Noah and the Whale?
I was in Noah and the Whale, yeah. I'm actually the reason that they named themselves after a Noel Baumbach film.
Sure. Yeah, in fact, you know what? To your Noah and the Whale, I raise you Razor Light.
No, because Noah and the Whale are more twee.
What do you mean by that?
They're more like...
You're listening to the Rugby World Cup retrospective, by the way.
I know. Rugby and whatever feed you were doing, retrospective. And like late naughty. I'm sure lots of people at home know what I mean, you know.
Yeah, you're talking exactly like indie landfill kind of thing. Like,
sort of, yeah.
Yeah, in there with the Fratellis and whatever the else.
Okay, Scottish twee pop is enough. It is a recognised genre. It's got a Wikipedia page.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. What's it listing as?
Does it list examples?
Please tell me it says the Kooks and Noah and the Whale. I would love that.
Jesus and Mary Chain.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Obviously,
Cuddlecore was also...
Never heard of Cuddlecore.
That's another name for twee pop.
Right.
Twee pop bands, here we are, okay. We're doing this live. Belle and Sebastian. Yeah. Oh, I guess Belle and Sebastian. Yeah. But they're kind of too good. Like...
Yeah. Also, did we say they have to be English?
I was thinking mostly British, yeah.
Okay, yeah, British.
Because that kind of dominated a lot of like the British kind of landscape of...
Sure, no.
I'll enter British twee pop bands. Oh,
yeah. No, that's fine. I'm being picky because they're Scottish. So, who else is on the list?
No, there's a lot of like bands I haven't heard of from the 90s.
Oh, okay.
There's a band called 14 Iced Bears, which I want to have heard of.
Yeah.
Maths and Physics Club, that is exactly the kind of thing they're called.
Yeah, that very much feels like, you know, We Are Scientists. It feels they're kind of like sister band, you know?
Exactly, they open for them. So you've got a kind of thematic
evening.
Maths
and Physics Club, yeah.
is like the thing they do more in stand-up, where they will line up.
The
like,
slow readers club.
Yes. You get the after school, you get all of them in, you know. Yeah. Yeah, you get just individual members of the Breakfast Club all form their own bands and they support each other. So rugby and whatever Fiji were doing.
How the hell did we get onto... Oh, yeah. Adverts.
Adverts. Yeah. Okay. So you were going to lead on to something about the actual rugby.
I think I was.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I can't remember where I was going to go with that. Alessandro Tuilagi, he's pretty good. He had a good time in this game, didn't he?
He was good. He was angry.
There was a good point a couple of minutes in where just first phase of their first scrum, Samoa just decide, let's give the ball to Tuilagi. And he manages to drive straight over Saramaya Baez if he's not there and win Samoa a penalty.
Did you take note of what Andy Gomesell said directly before that?
No.
So, straight beforehand... Martin Gilling was talking about, after the press conference, one of the Fijian coaches said, no, one of the Samoan coaches, sorry, said Tuilagi is listed as this weight in the programme. He's actually at least 10 kgs heavier than that. Right. Ignore all of that. And he was then talking about Tuilagi. He said, oh, it'll be great to see you have a run here. And Andy Gomesall, who spent the entire lead up, the entire start of the game, saying this is going to be a forward dominated battle. You know, this is going to be really keeping it really tight, all of this. And like, have you ever seen Fiji play?
Yeah.
But, and then he says, Gilliam says something like, oh, yeah, I'd love, you know, wouldn't it be great if Tuilagi gets a run here? And Gilliam says, there's absolutely no way this is going wide.
And then nothing can go wrong now.
Yeah, the moment he says that, the ball comes out, there's two passes into Tuilagi, he makes a break.
That's very funny. And now's probably a good time to talk about Andy Gomes.
I think now, so yeah, so... So, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Did we ever get to the bottom of Andy Gomesall?
No.
Like, did we ever work out how that happened or why that happened?
No. He made that one break in the World Cup final.
Sure.
Did he do anything else in his career?
I don't know.
Good break, to be fair. But
yeah. He's got one of those really weird names that I can never spell. Like, and he's not important enough that I've ever learned it.
Yeah.
You know, like, my phone recognises, like, four spellings of Bowden, but I've had to learn which one's right.
Oh, wow.
But Andy Gomesall, I don't know, I spell his name wrong every single time I try and write it. He's actually got quite... Wow, he's got a load of pictures on his Wikipedia page. Someone edited this quite feverishly.
Do you think it's him?
I think so. I think it might be. Him in action, like, against the Ospreys.
Do you remember when we... when we discovered that Matt Carley edits his own Wikipedia page?
Oh, yes! Yes, because, so, I looked into it. Matt Carley's Wikipedia page was constantly being updated from the same IP address. Every time he got called up to do another big game, every time he got called up to a new competition, every time something happened, the same IP address was adding this information.
And that was the only account, the only Wikipedia page that account was updating, wasn't it, with Matt Carley?
Yeah, like, because I wondered if it's just someone that updates referees.
There was another lead
pages.
that led to
there was something. I think I looked up the area it was in, and it was, you know, it corresponded with wherever he was from or whatever.
There
I
was
can't
something
remember,
more
but
to it.
I looked into this.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're pretty certain that Matt Carley edits his own Wikipedia page. But yeah, anyway, that's, you know, that's a discussion for another time, I suppose.
Yes.
Matt Carley. But
so yeah, Andy Gomesall, right?
Andy Gomesall, right?
So he retires just before this World Cup, and instantly ITV go, you've never commentated before. However, we'd like to give you all of the big games that don't include England.
He's like, Phil Vickery's at least got charm, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
And Lawrence Dallaglio has a good voice and was a good rugby player.
Exactly, like he had an iconic career. Like he was a household name as a player.
Sure, and you know, many times captains England captain.
If all of the women he slept with behind his wife's back tuned in, their viewing figures go up enormously.
Exactly.
It makes sense to put him on.
Yeah. So I guess we'll say that, you know, to balance out our thoughts on Andy Gomersall, because you know, I'm sure he's a nice bloke and everything.
No, I'm sure he is. Like, and he comes across as a nice enough bloke.
Yeah. But we can't figure him out between the two of us. So there's a point quite early on where Samoa stick up a high ball from their own 22, and Kini Mamiravalu jumps to catch it for Fiji, and Mari Farsavalu takes him early. So while he's still in the air, he takes him out. Penalty to Fiji, right? So referee correctly gives it. And so while watching it back, they kicked the corner for reference. While they're watching it back on the replay, Andy Gomersall says, I bet Mamiravalu's really... I bet he's really glad that the ball didn't go any higher, so Farsavalu didn't smash him legally, you know? So he didn't even say smash him legally, though. So his point is, right, that the ball comes down, he catches the ball, lands back on his feet, Farsavalu smashes him. He's really glad that didn't happen because it would hurt. And it's like, no. It still hurts if he's taking you in the air. And don't get me wrong, like, it hurts more if you're tackled in the air, hence the rule.
Yeah. But, okay, so he also... The remarkable thing about Andy Gomersall as a commentator is he's trying to speak in clichés, but he doesn't know them.
He's making them up as he goes, isn't he?
Yeah. So there's a point quite early on where Tanny Fackenbau has a try disallowed. It's a really nicely worked try. Paul Williams makes a little break. Offloads to George PC, who trips over but manages to get the pass in.
The Nalanga tackle.
Nalanga stops him, yeah. As he's going over, he loses the ball. Fine. Andy Gomersall then says, "All for money, you think it's a try."
Yes!
Which is not a phrase. Yeah, that's so you think first time, fair enough, he slipped up. He's kind of got the phrase wrong. Because it's, you know, for my money or...
All for money.
Yeah. And then he says it again. He says, "All for money, you think it's a try." That's not
and
the
then,
phrase.
Right. So later in the game, there's this point where Samoa have this lovely attack where they spread it wide. Tanny Fackenbau, for the second time in the game, doesn't pass to Mapasura outside him. You know where I'm going with this, right?
Go on.
So Nalanga turns the ball over and sprints most of the way. Tusi Pisi gets across and makes this brilliant try-saving tackle on Nalanga. Yeah. And then Andy Gomersall says at the stoppage, "I had all the money in the world, all my mortgage, my house, everything on Nalanga to score that try." It's like, so you personally, Andy Gomersall, are responsible for all of the money in the world, which has now gone to some betting company that you put on. In the 10-second window between Nalanga catching the ball and getting tackled by Tusi Pisi, in that, he'd managed to get hold of all the money in the world, put it on the betting site, and lose it.
If the entire world came together and thought, "We need to unionise, you know, we could get rid of money, we could go back to like some bar, we could do whatever." I think, "Oh, okay, well, let's put all the money in the world together and maybe we can buy out, like, you know..."
Some Martian betting company.
Exactly. Let's put all the money in the world together. Let's all pull what we've got together. We could win all the money in the universe, mate. Who do we take betting advice from and what do we bet on? We go, why not, to England's third choice scrum half from a few years ago. And make a bet on whether someone will score a try when they have men covering them from 60 metres.
And the fact that all the money in the world is at stake here, and that bastard Tusi Pisi still decides to chase him down.
I know.
And
he's
is
lost
he
part all
Martian?
Of his own money. Yeah.
Tusi Pisi's part Martian.
There's inside betting.
It's canon.
There's something going on here. Like, he looked like he's from another planet compared to Levea. There's something going on here. Like, he's been bought out. There's Max Fitching going on. Like, it's like how Tuolangi was paid, of course, to wear a branded mouthguard.
Yeah, yeah.
So, clearly, he's being paid to...
I get that it is a phrase. It is a phrase that, you know, you would put on your mortgage that he would, you know...
Or you'd say, for all the money in the world, I wouldn't do that.
Sure. But Andy Garmasol claims that he personally has put on all of the money in the world on Nalanga scoring that try.
Which is a bad bet anyway, because it doesn't look like a clean opportunity.
No, no. And don't get me wrong, sometimes you'd expect a player of his calibre to finish it, sure. But maybe quid on it.
I wouldn't stick put a fiver on that. I wouldn't put a fiver on that, like from that opportunity, if you'd paused it.
Yeah, but when you compare that to all the money in the world, I'd maybe think, five is not much.
Yeah, I definitely keep some money for food the following day. You know, I keep some money for the bus home.
Yeah. But eventually there'll be no buses because the Martians and their betting company will have... TCPC, who is a Martian spy, who's been planted into the Samoan rugby team. Along with his brother George, of course.
Hey, all for money, you think it's a try, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
All for money.
Anything else on Martin Gilliam?
I've also got something written down. No, Gomez didn't know the cliches, but I didn't write down what he just said, which is annoying. But there was a few more. Oh, because he talked about how good Samoa are at sevens. Then I realised, actually, this is 2 years on from Samoa winning the Sevens World Series.
Yeah.
So you kind of fair enough, you know. But yeah, him constantly bringing up how this was going to be battle in the forwards and how the Fijians have this great pack. And, I mean, I suppose they have maybe they're really good at, like, putting boxes together, and that's the great packing skills. You know, they put everything in their bags at the supermarket. I don't know. It's not a great pack. The other line of commentary I think I want to bring attention to is something Martin Gilliam says rather than Andy Gomasol, where Deacon Manu, going into this game, had missed more tackles than any other player in the World Cup. Okay.
Right.
He then makes a huge hit. Yeah. And it is enormous. It's like you can see bones leaving the body. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it is seismic, I believe is the word. Like
is the word, yeah.
It's, yeah, like all of the mad Samoan women in the crowd like react and cheer and everyone loses it at that tackle. Like that's probably the biggest like reaction of the day.
Yeah.
More than any of the free tries. So Deacon Manu nails him. And then, because he's already mentioned the thing about him missing tackles, Andy Gomez also said something like, you talk about him missing tackles, well, he will have been thinking about that, and then he hit him there. Then Martin Gilliam says... Sorry, I can't believe... Okay, Martin Gilliam says, yes, he's definitely been reading that. He probably took the stats to bed with him last night. I can just imagine Deacon Manu settling down for a romantic evening with his new wife, the stat sheet.
Yeah.
It's just the missed tackle stats. He lays them down tenderly, asks if they've got anything they want before... Deacon Manu goes off to brush his teeth and he comes back in. The stat sheet's laying seductively across the bed. To a list of everyone else's missed tackles. Saying Schottberger missed two last week. He's like, oh, you really know what to say to me. Just whispering in his ear how many Schalk van der Merwe missed.
I just got Schalk van der Merwe's back with his lions. I reckon
so he had the excuse to miss tackles. He had his hand bitten off by a lion yesterday.
I reckon Deacon Manu is constantly in Sam Lana's DMs saying like, hi, can I borrow that stat sheet again today, mate? Can you fix me up some stats tonight?
He also just loves flags because he almost plays for three different countries.
Yeah, and friends with benefits.
Yeah. I can't get the image of Deacon Manu having sex with a statue out of my head. You can just imagine him rocking up at Hong Kong Scottish years down the line. And them going...
Psst. Missed a few tackles yesterday, boys.
And I was like, why is he so excited? They're all going, psst, have you heard? The coach really fancies the stat sheet. He keeps going in, talking to the guy.
That's the sixth
that
knock-on you've done in this training session.
He keeps going in to go and check on, you know, the guy doing the stats, the guy collating the stats, and everyone thinks they fancy him. No, it's the stat sheet itself he's really got the hots for.
Where to go from there?
Can you imagine years down the line, like by this World Cup, like Deacon Manu, he's all of the romance has gone out of him and his stat sheets, his marriage, you know, from 2011. Like the one that he talked about originally, and there was such a spark there originally, you know. He was really excited to see how many missed tackles he'd made. But now, you know, it's just not the same. It's just not the same. It's all of those stats are old. You know, he wants updated stats. He wants new percentages. He's seen some new exciting stat sheets that have all kinds of things, like, you know, entries into the 22. He's seen all kinds of stat sheets that include, you know, things other than just possession and territory and kicks from hand. And he decides, you know, I'm going to ask my beautiful stat sheet wife for a divorce. And then he has to get the stat sheet. He has to get this piece of paper to fill out the paperwork involved. And then, however, just as they're getting towards the end of it, the stat sheet turns to Deacon Manu and she says, you know, you filled out 86 pieces of paperwork today. And Deacon Manu says, how many did I sign? And she says, a few of them were just contract pages. You put your signature on 62. And Deacon Manu just looks at her. He looks her right in the number six and says, I can't leave you. I could never leave you.
So does this mean there's going to be Deacon Manu stat sheet fan fiction from now on?
There already is. Just heard it.
That's the thing. Yeah. Also, fun fact, Deacon Manu has blocked me on Twitter like 10 years ago. Blocked me on Twitter. I have no idea why. So,
it's because you're not a stat sheet.
Yeah, clearly. I need to up my stat game, you know.
How do you think Israel Folau feels about Deacon Manu's stat addiction? Addiction? Can you call it addiction?
Sexuality.
Yeah.
You know, because like Israel Folau may be gay, but it doesn't mean he's addicted, you know?
Yeah, but, exactly.
Yeah,
he's a dick. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Aww. We're dreadful. Everyone's dreadful.
No, we're not. He's dreadful. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. So I wish Deacon Manu and his stat sheet wife all the best. Yeah, sure. And we should move on. Cracking
you know what?
Tackle.
You know what? If you want to write some Deacon Manu stat sheet fan fiction, leave it in the review of this podcast and give us 5 stars. Or send it to Israel Folau, or both.
Yeah, both. Both
anyway,
is preferable.
We are 51 minutes into this podcast recording, and we've basically not spoken about the game yet.
Oh, we haven't mentioned the tries, have we?
We've not mentioned
any. We mentioned a disallowed one.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, we mentioned Talai's.
I mentioned Talai's try.
Yeah, sure.
The losing team. So basically, the narrative of the game is Samoa go 15-0 up by chipping away penalties. They go 9-0 up very early on in the game.
Drop goal as well. Take a drop goal.
Yes, yes. There's a great drop goal where they basically don't set for it at all.
Yeah.
And then he just nonchalantly drops it over from like 40 yards in the corner.
I love to think that they were doing their video analysis on Fiji's previous games and they saw our boy Tony Scotza dropping goals from everywhere. And he just went, I'm having a bit of that.
Yeah.
If you were Fiji as well, you'd be so sick of drop goals by the end of the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that happens, so Samoa end up 15-0 up, and not long after that, well, they sit on that lead quite well for a bit, you know, because they know the Fijian discipline's quite poor, and they manage to exploit that pretty well. But then Fotuoli scores a try from a pick and go, where he does this kind of dummy offload, breaks this horrific tackle from Muramura Valu, where I have no idea what he's trying to do, and then he manages to get over and ground the ball. So fair play Fotuoli, he had a good game, but yeah, there's a try. Anything to say on that? I'm starting to realise there's a reason why I've not spoken about the tries.
Yeah, no, it's well taken by Fotuoli. Andy Gomesol calls him Fotuoli.
Yeah.
I guess it very wrong. But that's fine. That's fine. You know, he learns. He picks up from Gillingham's pronunciations. He also mispronounces Momo Valu once, which is ironic considering recent discourse. So,
of course.
Yeah, the other try is very nice. Paul Williams makes a really lovely break.
Yeah.
And then throws what, on the original angle, looks like quite a normal pass. But when you watch it on the wide shot, it's actually, he throws like a quite a long, because Stowers is quite far behind him. So he throws quite a long ball and really hangs it in the air for him.
Yeah, it's perfectly done, to be honest, because like it's easy to look at the way Williams delivers the pass and think that's not a very good way to execute a 2-on-1 because obviously he slows down into the contact. But that's actually kind of what you should do when you've got no support keeping up with you. You know, you fade out, fade back in, so you're not slowing down. You're just creatively drawing in the player while allowing your player's chance to catch up, you know?
Yeah.
And so Stiles managed to do it, and it's a really lovely sympathetic pass, isn't it? And it perfectly allows Stiles to run onto it, and he does his best Chris Ashton impression with the dive.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's both a great and a shocking dive.
Yeah.
The line
it's
of commentary
like deliberately
on...
deliberately shocking.
Yeah. The line of commentary on Tuolangi's try out in Australia and that win a few months before this tournament, where the commentator says it's earthquake stuff. Yeah. Like, that really applies here. Like, you can feel the ground shake.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess that's all the tries. Hang on. That's all I have to say on the tries.
All three of them are well taken rather than interesting points of
or
skill or construction.
Because both teams have their fair share of blown overlaps, which frankly, if either team, even with these players, with modern day attack coaches, had those overlaps, they'd have scored them all. Such was the lack of defence, more than two passes away from a ruck. And there's one where, like, a backline is so perfectly shaped that these days you'd go, oh, if he cross-kicks it, it's going to be a try. But that wasn't the norm back then.
Yes. There was a point at which my brain just went, it's going to be a cross-kick. Yeah, and it didn't happen. Yeah. And, you know, like, some do the three passes to get it wide, but it didn't feel right at all.
No,
you know, my brain wouldn't accept it.
PC gets it in kind of the fullback channel. George PC, this is. Gets it in the kind of fullback channel. And he kind of thinks like, oh, I'm not really sure what to do at this point. Am I supposed to run straight? Am I supposed to run outside? You know, have a run, pass it? What am I supposed to do? Whereas, you know, there is an answer to that now, which is he wouldn't get the ball in the first place. It would be kicked across field.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. There's also another thing that happens is, so after Samoa have really pulled ahead, you know, in the final 5 minutes or so, Fiji have brought on, they've brought on the whole bunch, you know. Albert Vuli makes a huge impact when he comes on. He's very, very good. And they also bring on Akapusi Ongera, who is a fantastic rugby player.
And he's fuming.
And an actual rugby player, not whatever Fiji were doing.
Yeah.
And they also bring on Rupuni Nasinga.
I know where this is going.
In the last 5 minutes, both Akapusi Ongera and Rupuni Nasinga, the replacement lock and flanker respectively, kick the ball. Both of them putting these little grubbers from themselves to chase.
Which Fiji haven't been doing all game.
No.
You can tell that they've been sat on the bench together and they've overheard a coach behind them saying, like, I think we need to kick a bit more. I think we need to kick a bit better, you know, put something in behind. And they, instead of coming on and telling the 10 or 12 that, they've just come on and gone, ah, well, I want to show I've been listening. So kicks on me, boys.
Like, there's an element of FIDM about Ongera doing
particularly
it.
Particularly Ongera,
But then Nasinga feels exactly like that, like him wanting to show off a bit and be like, yeah, I'm getting myself on the team. You know, I was listening. I know the game plan. We kick, don't we?
Yeah.
Like, show off.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, no, I also picked up on that. That's, fun. Speaking of kicking, Alassane Tuolangi puts in two kicks. Both brilliant. The first one is a chip and chase, which he very nearly scores himself. Mm. Kenitale kind of jogs back to ground it. And beats him to it. It bounces into the end goal area and Kenitale grounds it. Tuolangi was inches away from scoring that try himself. And there's another one where Tuolangi has a run. He bounces Gonover, keeps running a bit, and then kind of stalls, kind of goes back as if like seven style, you know, to pull a pass or whatever, and then puts in an open play box kick, and it bounces into the Fijian 22, and they get like a net gain from it, and it's
I
a really lovely kick. Yeah, no, it was really weird, especially because it was Tuolangi, and seeing Tuolangi kick is not usual.
Because when he does, it's one of those along the touchline for him to chase.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or to smash a fullback, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he wants to put the fullback into touch.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was bizarre seeing him kick twice in this game. but yeah. he kicked very well. Mapasura as well did a lovely one. There was one where he was unlucky as well, where he takes a quick 22 dropout and kicks it out on the four, and it was nearly inch perfect. Yes. But it's one of those that just sails slightly over the touchline. But yeah, no, there was another lovely wipers kick, which you referred to earlier, which just bounces just outside the 22 for Fiji. Yeah, no, he had a great game as well, Mapasura.
Yeah. The one other thing I want to mention, I don't know if you saw this, but at one point, Samoa kick one of the penalties, 2CPC slots it over because he's a good rugby player and a good goal kicker. Yeah, he was the statistically best kicker in the tournament. He missed his first shot of goal in this game. He had the highest kicking percentage. The other thing that was mentioned, at this point in the tournament, there were 10 kickers with 50% or lower kicking accuracy.
They weren't all Martin Rodriguez.
I think they all played against England, though.
That's, to be honest, genuinely good shout.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Argentina went through about three kickers in that game against England. You know, Georgia must have gone through one or two. Romania certainly had Dumbrava and Dumitrash, both had a go.
Yeah.
So that's genuinely a shout.
They all seem to just keep missing.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, but after he kicks one of his penalties, the camera cuts to some Samoan fans in the crowd together, and one of them is holding a sign that they have clearly made themselves.
Right.
Which is, and I had to pause it, it's a picture of the Rock, and onto the Rock they have photoshopped a black Samoa jersey. So I thought it was an all-black shirt they photoshopped on at first, but it's not. It might just be the light, but it looks like a black shirt with the Samoa crest on it.
Right.
And sunglasses that don't look convincing. Like, they clearly couldn't find a picture of the Rock in sunglasses, but they wanted the Rock to be in sunglasses. So they photoshopped sunglasses onto the Rock.
Right.
Okay. And next to it, it has a quote. It says, "And the Rock says," beginning a sentence in "and," "Do you smell what the Manu is bringing?" Then it's not an ellipsis. It's five dot 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 dot, dot, which annoys me because an ellipsis is a recognised grammatical thing.
Yeah.
It should be three. Then four exclamation marks. I initially thought that was like another word, but I couldn't read it. And then it says, "Auntie Vi, can you smell it?"
What?
Yep.
The hell is that referring to?
Their auntie. Can their auntie smell what the Manu is bringing?
Okay. Sure.
I don't track the logic in making that sign.
No. Because clearly that's an in-joke that only they will, they will get.
Because I thought about it, right? So the Rock is part Samoan.
Mm-hmm.
We know that, right? We know he played rugby briefly.
Sure.
However, we also know in rugby he's talked about supporting the All Blacks.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also talked about Samoans being his brothers and so on. And there's a bit, actually, in the film Hobbs and Shaw, which is maybe the third greatest film of all time, starring The Rock and Jason Statham, in which they play a pair of mismatched special service agents who are brought together in order to stop a bulletproof man played by Idris Elba.
All of your favourite films star Jason Statham?
Most of them. Yeah. They're either starring Jason Statham or they're singing in the rain.
Okay.
Which starring should star Jason Statham. Statham. Yeah. It should star Jason Statham.
I think that should happen.
Better. Yeah. If you took Debbie Reynolds
I think
and replaced with Jason Statham.
Jason Statham should play Deacon Manu in the rom-com adaptation of the fan fiction.
I agree, yeah. He should play Deacon Manu and the stat sheet.
Yeah.
Actually, is that appropriation? Or, is that
in fact,
we're taking a role, we're giving a white actor a role for a piece of paper.
Yeah, that's true. I was going to say maybe The Rock should play Deacon Manu and Jason Statham should play the stat sheet.
Scarlett Johansson is both.
Okay, deal.
Yeah, she's got range.
Okay, and Jason Statham can play like Nicky Little or somebody instead.
Yeah, but there's a bit in Hobbs and Shaw, right, where the film in which Jason Statham and The Rock have to play mismatched Secret Service agents who hate each other but have to work together in order to stop a bulletproof man playing Idris Elba.
Okay,
right? Okay.
With you.
In which they realise they can't beat Idris Elba alone. So The Rock decides they need to go and meet his family. So they go to Samoa.
Right.
And someone in that crowd shot apparently has caps for Samoa. Because he's got like this, all of these really big Samoan brothers who live there. And I hope it's like that. But then they clearly went some wordplay on The Rock's catchphrase being, "Can you smell what The Rock is cooking?"
Yeah.
And turn it in, "Can you smell what the Manu is bringing?" Because they're bringing the hurt, the pain, the fire, or all of the above.
Yeah.
But then they want to know if their auntie can smell it.
So specific.
I know. Because it was weird before they mentioned their auntie. But the moment she comes up, it doubles down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, the worst thing is, some of it's quite a good Photoshop. Like the sunglasses aren't particularly good.
Yeah.
But the shirt itself, you can tell it's photoshopped on.
Right, yeah.
But it actually looks all
right. Right, okay.
Like, I had a moment of looking back and, oh, is it photoshopped? No, it is.
Can you find a picture of this and maybe we'll attach it somewhere?
I can try and find one. I can try and dig back through for it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll it's after, it I think, like, his last penalty. The one that makes it 15-0.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, I'll have a look at that. It's certainly a thing. Do you have anything else before we move on to our...
I have one final thing. There's a point about half an hour or so into the game where Fiji throw a line out in, so Sunir Koto throws it in, and you can hear Moshiraga very loudly on the ref mic shouting, "Not straight!" And then the referee gives it as not straight. And so for every remaining line out of the first half, Shiraga shouts, "Not straight!" as soon as Koto's thrown it in, which I think is a great bit of shithousery.
And I like that.
There's another point where there's a nondescript, really posh touch judge who I don't recognise. Okay. But there's a point where Fiji are throwing in again to a line out. This is the start of the second half. And Schwalger is basically stood in Cotto's way as he's about to throw it in. Mm-hmm. And so this posh English touch judge is saying, "Oh, two blue, move through steps that way." So he's out of Cotto's way and actually stood in the hooker channel. And Schwalger just kind of looks at him and doesn't move. And he just gives him a look of, "Well, what are you going to do?" and just doesn't move, and he just stays there. And yeah, like, the touch judge wasn't going to penalise him. It's not really an offence where, like, you know, obviously he wasn't going to throw it into him. If it made an impact, then maybe he'd get penalised for it. But
yeah,
Schwalger just gives him a look of just like, "Well, you're not going to do anything, so I'm going to stay here."
I love that. Yeah, that's great.
He's great.
Top Schwalger, great player, great guy, and great leader of the war dance. We should probably touch on the head-to-head war dancers.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
The Thimby against the Civitale. Yeah,
and maybe that's why the atmosphere is so great, because they get properly pumped up by... And they don't do them at the same time as happened in the previous World Cup.
They do them slightly out of sync.
But yeah, so they overlap.
Yeah.
But Fiji do most of theirs, and then when they're like 80% the way through, Samoa start.
It's the other way around.
Fair enough. Yeah, okay.
But yeah. And it's brilliant.
Yeah. It's great for building an atmosphere and building an occasion.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And because you don't realise it when it's at night, but Eden Park, the crowd is actually quite close to the stands, to the pitch.
Yeah.
So you get a real sense of, even the really high up seats feel quite close.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of test grounds, you know, where like we both, I'm sure, sat up in the rafters in the Millennium in Twickenham.
Twickenham, yeah.
And you don't feel near the pitch, you know, you're still in the ground, you still get the atmosphere, but you don't feel close to the players, whereas you get the impression from Eden Park, you look like that. And like, I really got that in Tokyo. Like, the Tokyo Stadium is amazing for that.
Mm.
Like, the sight lines are great.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously I've never been to Eden Park, you know.
No, of course.
If Jamie was here as he was last week, he'd be far better qualified who's going to be there this weekend, but there we go, never mind. So yeah, no, I thought that was a fantastic moment for kind of raising the atmosphere and building that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's great. If you had to pick a winner of the War Dance War, who would you pick?
Samoa.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, Samoa.
Not just based on the fact that the Civitale is an objectively better dance, I say objectively, in my opinion. But no, they smashed it going into this. Like, this was a really good Samoan team at that, because they were all terrifying. So, yeah.
The Civitale is my favourite of the four war dancers.
Agreed. Yeah, by far.
Yeah. Because I think the everyone syncing up on the Le Manu is iconic and wonderful.
Yeah. And Schwalger was the man to lead a war dance.
Because he was so good at the Le Manu!
Yeah. He was terrifying.
Yeah.
Wouldn't pick on him.
I suppose you can split different hackers off if you've got two or three hackers.
Yeah.
But I still take the Civitale over the
ball. Yeah. I do like the Capo Pangol hacker, but that's not as good as the Civitale. Like, I'd have that in second place.
Yeah. I think I'd then have two hackers and second and third place. I'm then maybe looking at the Civitale.
You reckon?
And then probably the Phoebe last.
Really? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think I'd go... Yeah, I think I'd agree with you.
I don't know if this is like cultural appropriation.
Just ranking them.
But at the same time...
What's your favourite war dance?
Yes.
Very Alan Partridge.
I was about to say, it's an Alan Partridge opening. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
They can do them all to the Phoebe's back
booty. Quite difficult, wasn't it? Anyway.
Have you ever married a tax sheet?
Should we move on to our closing segment?
Let's move on to Man of the Match and Dick of the Day. Should we start with Dick of the Day?
Yeah, all right. So I'll go first, shall I?
Go first, please.
Yeah, okay. So there's a point where Fiji are about to play some kind of shape off 10. So okay. Nicola Little has the ball, and he's passing the ball to Deacon Manu himself, you know, who's left, he's tucked his wife up into bed and gone out and is leading his country. And he's about to carry the ball, at which point Saramaya Bai just kind of decides, no, I'd rather have the ball. To the point which he tries intercepting the pass, knocks it on about 10 yards, and looks like he's kind of tackling Deacon Manu because he's that desperate to have the ball himself when he wasn't going to do anything. He just wanted the ball. And it was just really selfish and stupid. So Fiji cough up the ball because Manu was effectively tackled by his own player, being Saramaya Bai. So my Dick of the Day is Saramaya Bai.
That's very deserving. That's a very, very good shout, Dick of the Day. My Dick of the Day is Nimi Kenetale. For A, he's just total inability to pass.
Yeah.
And B, for the fact that clearly his forwards did not listen to him and did not respect him.
Okay, this is good. Carry
on. He's the Fiji scrum half. And I noticed that first towards the end of the first half that he's got screaming at two of his forwards to kind of move that way and they just don't listen to him. And then one of them walks around to the other side of the ruck and does the exact opposite of what he's calling for. And then I started to, like, I went,
fuck
like,
you,
hold on,
what don't you tell me moment.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I then started thinking, like, hold on, is that those two just weren't listening to him? And I then started to keep an eye on it, and none of the forwards were listening to a word he was saying the whole game.
That's so funny, I didn't notice
that. So not
that.
Only could he not pass, and not only did he almost let Tuilagi score that try.
I nearly had him in for that. Yeah. I nearly put him in Dick of the Day for that.
Yeah, but he just, he wasn't listening. And then it came to the point in which there's a point That's where so Fiji funny. Have a bit of an overlap in the second half. And the fly half twice, once he
works
around
what you're
to the other
about.
Side, and he calls for the ball. And the fly then, Kenetale doesn't give it, he throws a mispass. And then, I think the one you're thinking of, where completely
they've got a
15-metre
blindside and nothing there.
No one
there. Kenetale shrugs.
Yeah.
He actively shrugs when there's like Murmur Valo or somebody spots this and goes, oh, wait, no, I'm going to hug that touchline, when he's just letting his forwards pick and go. And like he sees him, he spots that his man's completely unmarked for 15 metres. I get, you know, if somebody's unmarked, you don't always necessarily have to pass them the ball because somebody could cover across or whatever. But he had 15 metres. That ball is beating the man. Kenetale shrugs.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So all of this added up to him being very much my Dick of the Day.
Yeah, well deserved. No, you've nailed that. Fair play. It's too late for me to change my call, but yeah, you've nailed that.
Should we move on to Man of the Match?
Sure. My Man of the Match is Kaan Fotu-Aliyi. Mm-hmm. Because, and ironically, I was going to say a lot of it is down to the fact that he controlled his forwards really well. And like, he very clearly knew what the Samoan game plan was. He always was very annoying in defence. He kicked well. His passing was sharp. And he was such a control freak, you know, that like whether it was his outside centre or his loosehead prop or whatever, he would tell them what their role is. And he absolutely nailed it and took his try well, of course. And yeah, no, he was really good in this game. Made a little half break as well where he dummied this box kick. He had a really good game.
Yeah, no, I agree with Fotu-Aliyi. He was one of the few. Really, I think there's two players in contention. As I say, like Nalanga and Talai have very good for Fiji, but I don't think they're really in contention.
The other one I think it was Tusi Pisi, by the way.
Tusi Pisi right up there, and George Stowers, I think, is outstanding. Like George Stowers, I think, is really, really good.
Yeah.
And if I was going to give it to a player, I'd give it to George Stowers. However, I'm going to give it to the crowd. Because I think this game is made and brought alive by
what
the crowd.
What a cop-out answer.
I know. No, it's George Stowers. Like, it's George Stowers if we're picking a player.
Sure.
But am I allowed to give it to the crowd? Are you going to allow it? Or should I give it to George Stowers?
It's a lot of people. And you just can put it in the stat sheet as the Samoan crowd.
Yeah, people of the match. Yeah. Well, I just want the stat sheet to be as long as possible so Deacon Marnie's got something to deal with.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's fair. That's the thing, because I don't think the man of the match or Dick of the Day has to be someone who's playing or even involved in the game. But I think the crowd is a bit of a stretch. I don't know.
We've had at least two referees. At least George Clancy and Nigel Owens have got nominations.
Yeah, and rugby was nominated.
So,
DJ
and the commentators have got a nomination once. Yeah, exactly. I think it's the first man of the match nomination that isn't from a team, though.
Yeah, true.
Okay, no, I'll go for George Stowers. I've been boring.
We nearly gave it to Scott Van Der Merwe for his lion taming.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
George Stowers gets my official nod of the match. Okay, so I think that brings us pretty much through all of the rugby and also whatever Fiji were doing.
Yeah, this episode's been a lot longer than I thought it would be.
I know, I had nothing to say about this game.
Yeah.
Which is why I've talked about John Lewis adverts.
I was going to say, yeah, and the Kooks.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
and Jason Statham.
I always want to talk about Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Please, if you're so inclined, if you fancy it, join us again next week, next time, when we will be talking about another truly iconic fixture from the Rugby World Cup. It was Ireland 62, Russia 12. It was a rugby match that took place in New Zealand.
Yeah.
However, the game after that, and the one they were very much teasing the whole way during this game and during the half-time and post-match and pre-match and everything, is the game after that, Argentina against Scotland.
Oh, hello.
Which is one of the games of the tournament. Yep. And one of the most kind of iconic games of this tournament and of any Rugby World Cup. One of the most iconic pool games, I think, of the last few World Cups.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, you know, I agree with all of that, and I just want to, again, thank everyone for listening, and please do leave your fan fiction in the reviews. Please do stick to that. And
please do.
Thank you all for listening, and before we go, I'd just like to say, I love you like Deacon Manu loves stat sheets.
Yes, and I wanted to say a very special message for Deacon Manu, if he is listening, you know.
All the stat sheets.
I don't know if Deacon Marnie himself is listening, but I want to add a little special treat, a little moment of like ASMR for Deacon Marnie. Okay, are you ready?
Okay,
I'm going to come up to the microphone. I don't know if you hear that properly, but what I really want to say is hello, Deacon. In this match against Samoa, you made 6 tackles and you missed 1. I hope you're having a really, really nice evening and that you appreciated all 3 of your carrying meters in this game against Samoa. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and we'll see you next time. Thank you and goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.